Welcome to each of you to this chapel service, and a special welcome to you, Mary. Sorry for the bump along the way in your journey here, but you're here, you're safe, and we welcome you and look forward to your capstone presentation, which, if you look to your order of worship, is entitled Looking for Midwives in a World of Privilege. It's my privilege to introduce Mary. Mary has a Bachelor of Arts degree in psychology from Calvin College, Grand Rapids, Michigan. She has a Master of Arts in Family Counseling from Eastern Nazarene College, Quincy, Massachusetts. She served as a pastoral intern at Cedar Grove Charge United Methodist Church, Winchester, Virginia, in 2014 and 15. And prior to that, worked for a considerable time as a day treatment program specialist for Valley Community Services Board in Stanton, Virginia. And she also has experience as an in-home therapist and family therapist. We look forward to your presentation later in the service.
Psalm 13, a prayer for deliverance. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I bear pain in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all day long? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord, my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep the sleep of death. And my enemies will say, I have prevailed. My foes will rejoice because I am shaken. But I trust in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me.
Thank you. I'll be reading from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 12, verses 29 through 31. Jesus answered, "The first is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these.'" And secondly, from John chapter 13, verse 33 through 35. "Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for me, if you have love for one another." The word of God for the people of God.
And I'll be reading from Exodus chapter 1, verses 6 through 22. "Then Joseph died, and all his brothers, and that whole generation. But the Israelites were fruitful and prolific. They multiplied and grew exceedingly strong, so that the land was filled with them. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, 'Look, the Israelite people are more numerous and more powerful than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, or they will increase and in the event of war join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land.' Therefore they set taskmasters over them to oppress them with forced labor. They built supply cities, Pithom and Ramesses, for the Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread, so that the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. The Egyptians became ruthless in imposing tasks on the Israelites and made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and in every kind of field labor. They were ruthless in all the tasks that they imposed on them. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah and the other Puah, 'When you act as midwives to the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stool, if it is a boy, kill him, but if it is a girl, she shall live.' But the midwives feared God. They did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, 'Why have you done this and allowed the boys to live?' The midwives said to Pharaoh, 'Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwives can come to them.' So God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very strong. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, 'Every boy that is born to the Hebrews you shall throw into the Nile, but you shall let every girl live.'" This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you. Good morning. So the question on my mind right now, of course, is why does my car break down when I am coming to my capstone presentation? After all of the hours of prayer and tears, when I am coming to open my heart and share with you some of my greatest grief. So what I say is we move forward because of all the hours of prayer and tears. This is where my heart is, and this is where God has been working in my life. So my actual project, Looking for Midwives in a World of Privilege, was a project for my three sons. It was to write for them a letter, which became quite lengthy, about dealing with racism, identifying racism, and learning how to walk through and navigate and hopefully process through some of the things that our family has experienced, things that are to come for them, and ways to understand that Christian comes in many forms and does not automatically mean that it is a safe and good place for them, but can mean that is a good and safe place for them. As I was working on it, I realized that it was actually a continuation of the Racial Healing for the Blue-Eyed Soul class I had taken with David Evans. So I have done some work during that. I continue with this, and I know there is still more to go. The project I wrote for my son starts like this. Psalms 23:4. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil. You are with me, your rod and your staff. They comfort me. I now pronounce you husband and wife. I didn't know that those words meant I was switching tribes, moving to another world. Yes, we all understand that when we get married, that we are, in fact, deciding to make our own family, kind of. In-laws double the number of parents one has, cousins suddenly multiply, and siblings become numerous. What I didn't understand, though, was that I was doing more than just that. As much as people are blessed to have increased their families through marriage, it can still feel like they are ping-pong balls bouncing back and forth between his and hers. For the biracial family, it's even more complicated. American culture sends us another place, for we don't belong in us or them, we become what are they? I came to Racial Healing feeling beat up emotionally. I had been taking in all the bits of racism for many years, but I never stopped to think about how it was hurting me as well. I always felt that because I was white and we were the ones doing the hurting, that I had no right to express my own pain. I believe that racism is a white people problem. White people need to fix it. What I gained from class was a way to talk about it, a way to begin working through what I feel all white people are responsible for. Racism, by definition, is a thought or a belief that one race is better than another. It's a thought or a belief. We're not even talking about actions or behaviors. With the kind of history and current problems in the U.S., there's really no arguing that racist behaviors abound. What seems hard for people to understand is that the belief or thought that white people are better than people of color is actually the cause of the hardship. It's the cause of microaggression, which are assaults and insults or invalidations that are subtle but meant to undermine the person of color. Because of their subtle nature, they injure the person at the core but leave room for the white person to deny that that's what was intended when they said it. Privilege is a right or benefit granted to a person. White privilege is a privilege that is granted as a result of having white skin. All white people have white privilege. One can argue that is present in different degrees, but if you are white, you have it, period. On August 14th, 2015, I was reading with my youngest son, Isaac, at my side. He had just passed his 6th birthday. He was quiet, looking at his own book, when he started talking, and he said, "I think they should invent a medicine so that when racist people come after brown people and shoot them, you would only fall down for a short time, but then you could get up and just run away." He repeated the story again, trying to work it out in his mind. my son, predicting his own destiny as the result of the world he was living in. He was trying to figure out how to stay alive. Isaac didn't consider that the white cop didn't have to shoot and kill people of color. He assumed he would. My six-year-old understands white privilege. I see racism as a cognitive behavioral response to the God, little g, of whiteness. I see people move in and out of loving everyone and then returning to cling again to whiteness. I see an affection towards whiteness that brings chills to my spine. There are times that the words and behaviors of white Christians have made me withdraw into prayer, begging God to protect me from the evil. It physically feels like I'm curled into a ball, being kicked over and over. I get angry when white people put me in the white box and assume I think as they. I know I'm white and carry the marks of what that means, but no one has to engage whiteness, and no one has to give in to that God. The following is a series of journal entries and parts of what I wrote that is specifically for my boys. The depth to which Americans worship whiteness touched me in a different way on February 26, 2012, when Trayvon Martin was shot and killed by a racist man for walking to his father's house with Skittles and iced tea. He was 17. The man who attacked and then killed him was acquitted of all charges on July 13, 2013. The racism in our country on display. A child was made to look like an adult with a criminal past, and the cold-blooded killer was pitied. People had to protest just to get the killer charged, and through it all, the fact that an adult man attacked and killed a child was lost. The child was black, so white America insisted he was in the wrong. Everything I had done to try and keep you safe seemed to disappear. You were vulnerable, and there was nothing I could do to protect you. I grieved that this was the land I lived in. I grieved that I couldn't hold you in my arms and protect you from white people. I cried that the God of whiteness had so overtaken our churches and communities that I was the only one in church asking for prayer. I cried that I had to try and convince them that this wasn't just a Norville thing. This was about how we treat each other. I cried that each and every white person I met had to be assessed for their level of danger to you. I cried that they wanted to and willfully engaged in worshiping the God of whiteness over the God of Abraham and Sarah. I cried that you would have to grow up and deal with this. I cried that I wasn't teaching you how to cope with racism. And I cried from the depth of my being that people I love were seen for their skin color and not as being made in God's image. Tamir Rice was shot by a white cop while playing in a Cleveland park. The cop was acquitted, and the fuss against Tamir was that he was too big for his age. There's always some excuse. To kill, a breakdown in communication, a menacing look, not listening, carrying a weapon, changing lanes without indicating. The desire to destroy God's creation and serve the God of whiteness is chosen by many. For Tamir, I will play like a boy. I will jump like a kid. I will be no more. Wind blowing, leaves dying, a baby I'm held, a baby I die. Today I will get up. Today I will get up. Remember, the sun has risen. Time is before me. Places I have been, rivers flowing. I will be what hasn't been. Cross the waves, move in rhythm. Mark my place, I am hidden. Never than before, moved to dust, shackles and chains, guns and silence. Peace will take what life will give. Tomorrow is over, because today I will get up. On June 17th, 2015, Reverend Clementa Pinckney, Tawanza Sanders, Cynthia Hurd, Reverend DePayne Middleton Doctor, Sharonda Coleman Singleton, Ethel Lance, Susie Jackson, Reverend Daniel Simmons Sr., and Myra Thompson were sitting in Bible study at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina, with a white Lutheran man who spent an hour with them before shooting and killing them because of the color of their skin. July 19th, 2015, Charleston 9. I'm spinning and spinning. Why am I alone? I run from door to door pleading for an answer, but I am alone. There were jokes and insults, slams and cruelty, willingness to hurt. And now when the trigger is pulled, I am alone. Where did you go with your hate and your privilege? Where are you hiding your guilt and your shame? You pulled the trigger, got what you wanted. You are one and the same. You supported the pain, believed in the rift, built the wall. You are the killer. Maybe I am lucky. I am alone. November 28, 2016. I don't think the Charleston massacre, where 9 people were shot and killed in the name of white privilege and racism, is the only black church massacre happening today. I believe the white church that minimizes minorities, misuses its power, and forgets its God is also involved. On April 1st, Matt, can you? One more. That one. Thank you. April 1st, my battle with racism. The battle rages on, this precious journey in life where I choose to be me over being what you want me to be. It's not that you don't want what's best for me. In a million years, that's not it. You love me just as I love you, but it's the heart that's different. I see you in a place that I don't want to be. You offer aid for me to step across. You give me encouragement and cheer me on, but I don't move. I'm not coming. It starts again. Surely I wasn't hearing correctly. Surely I would choose to join you if I just understood what it meant and where you wanted me to be. But I wouldn't. I won't. I nod and turn away. Tears are popping. It's not enough. You ignore me again in pursuit of me, my hair being pulled in desperation, my sweater yanked to the ground. I'm leaning away, ripping myself from the you that is pulling me back, and still it is not enough. My grunts turn to screams as I can't get away, and still you are pulling, pulling the me that you want to own, refusing to believe that me is whole and loved on its own. Screams drowned in tears, and still I will not go. I will not be part of what is you. I will be me, and me is not you. I may look like you and move like you, but I am me. I don't sound like you. I don't act like you. You will not get me. You will not pull me in. I'm shouting now with fierce regret. How could you even think I would jump right back? My clothes are torn. The struggle is waning. I will win or die. If I lose my will and fall to your side, my death is certain. Empty and hollow, devoid of blood and guts and life, I see it coming. I feel my fall. But as I fall, my hands dig in. My clothes are torn. My blood covers what is naked. My will lives strong. Rage and fire merge like rain. I fight again. I will be me. The storm rages on, as some storms will. Nights turn to days, and days turn to nights. The years, they pass. What frightens me most is how often I see you. At church, at work, at school, on the playground, in art, at the school, on TV, in the mall. Everywhere I go, you are there. It's exhausting. I'm tired. The need for hope becomes overwhelming at times. The passages that were read are about loving God and neighbor are so commonly recited that they seem to have lost their meaning. There's a lack of acknowledgement that when we are to love our neighbor as ourselves, that means everyone, no exceptions, no qualifications, no judgments. Margaret Gunther, in her book Holy Listening, The Art of Spiritual Direction, connects the characteristics of a midwife with that of a spiritual director, and in doing so connects the process of spiritual growth with the process of birth. There is so much we can learn about interacting with others if we use midwives as models to be emulated. Gunther says, the midwife is present to another in a time of vulnerability, working in areas that are deep and intimate. It is a relationship of trust and mutual respect. When we read the text for today, it's quite noticeable that we are not given the name for the king or pharaoh, but we are for the midwives. We acknowledge that the king wasn't named to remind us that his power and wasn't named to remind us that his power and wealth were not what was appreciated in this story. We let him remain nameless as we take in and acknowledge those in our story who made a difference, who were set aside by God, named and blessed. The nameless king began seeking supporters because of fear and jealousy to turn the Israelites into slaves. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread, so that the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. Here we have God providing and caring for the Israelites in a manner that is the complete opposite of the goal the king was trying to accomplish. The king's determination to hurt and control the Israelites overshadows his judgment. Though we don't know what kind of person he was before, we know that this story shows a man who believes that hurting others was the best way to promote himself. It is also impossible for us to know whether the midwives were Egyptian or Hebrew. Just as one translation says Egyptian midwives, another says midwives to the Israelites. They have Hebrew names. Shifra means beautiful, and Pua means one who cries out. But again, we don't know if these women were born Hebrew or Egyptian, and if they were converted, or if they simply have Hebrew names. We conclude that Shifra and Pua had some power. There were far too many Israelites to only have two midwives, so we can assume that Shifra and Pua were in leadership positions which allowed them authority and influence. Pharaoh called and spoke to them directly and expected them to follow his plan. Perhaps Shifra and Pua found the decision easy as Pharaoh's command to kill infants put them in direct conflict with their roles as midwives. I think they must have feared their own lives at some point. If they were slaves, they could easily face the same fate that Pharaoh was commanding for male babies. If they were Egyptians, they were betraying their own people in order to save others. We know that no matter how difficult the decision was, it was based on their view of God. Verse 17 tells us they feared God. Shifra and Pua were suddenly placed in the same position as Eve and Adam. Eve and Adam were faced with deciding between listening to God or listening to the snake. Shifra and Pua were faced with listening to God or listening to the king. Just as the white churches have to decide if they will listen to God and love their neighbor, as they are called to do, or listen to the world and live in white privilege and racism. Shifra and Pua chose to fear God. What that means is that they were more afraid of being disobedient to God than they were of being disobedient to Pharaoh. Fear of God can also be understanding as trusting in God. They trusted God to care for them even while they disobeyed the king. Trust in God is important today while fighting against racism. It takes bravery to stand up to people you love and confront them about their attitudes and behaviors. It takes courage to stand against the crowd and stand for God's created people. Shifra and Pua's actions made them midwives for a nation. They knew the result of their choice would help the Israelites grow and get stronger. They defied their rulers and put themselves at risk to help others survive. If we are also to follow God's command to love others as we love ourselves, our hearts will change, and we too will do what it takes to allow others to grow and get stronger. Racism and white privilege work in our country to minimize people of color. Its goal is to hold them down, decrease their numbers through incarceration, poverty, little to no education, poison water supply, poor medical care, and death in police custody. It's our call to God's family and to ministry, the same as being called to love God with all our hearts and our neighbor as ourself. If we believe in those commandments, then how can we engage in racist thoughts and white privilege? Doesn't that make our agreement one of systemic racism, our macroaggressions, our acceptance of racist comments in church, our belief in our own superiority, a sin? If we are choosing to follow the world and its belief that white skin is better than black skin, aren't we saying God didn't create people of color in her image? If we believe that white people are better than black people, aren't we saying that God's creation is flawed? Hearing racism without calling it out is the same as Shifra allowing Pua to kill. It is allowing sin to grow in our brothers and sisters and supporting the abuse of our brothers and sisters. Protecting bad cops and supporting the killing of unarmed, sometimes innocent people of color is the same as pulling the trigger. Racism brings death to your own heart. Shifra and Pua chose life. They joined the Hebrew women and walked together. Simply, life is not about us and them. Life is about we. Shifra and Pua didn't see the Hebrew women as being them. They didn't pretend they were caring for others by fixing them or feeling sorry for them. Exodus 1:17 doesn't say they engaged in missions or charity works. It says they feared God. They took care of their own hearts. They centered their lives on God, and they became models for us today as we work to heal the racial divide. We too must confess our thoughts that are filled with whiteness. We must confess our beliefs and engagement with whiteness. Our God loves us and is ready to reveal where and how we are hurting others so that we might better serve God. God is eager to fill us with her love and become the center of all our relationships. In doing this, we are able to join others and walk together. Diversity isn't about the number of people of color in your church. Diversity comes from your heart. It's about how you love. Amen.
Bless you, Mary, as being a midwife to us in this moment, and inviting us to move into your experience and words with an awareness of what's within and around us. Take a moment and just let what you have heard settle in to your being. And in a moment, we'll bring closure to this service, and there will be opportunity to reflect with and back to Mary in the capstone conversation. Just be still for a moment.